attack, or I should say scare. I am lucky I no longer work at Morgan. I work two blocks away at the James A. Farley building. At Morgan, I used to be assigned to the third shift, where the machines contaminated with anthrax were found. The building was never evacuated, and many of my friends still work there. Congress was evacuated, so was virtually every other building where even traces of anthrax were suspected, but not Morgan Station. One of my friends said, "I really feel that I'm being treated as a second-class citizen." Another said, "It's impossible for him to believe anything management says from now on." Whoa, that's a very common phenomenon, isn't it? Another compared it to the notorious Tuskegee study in which African-American men in Alabama were subjected to unethical medical experiments. "Look at all the people of color who work here," he said. "Why are we the only ones still working in a contaminated building?" First, I did not share this view, but when I went to see my physician recently, he told me about a woman patient who worked in the Morgan facility and agonized over whether to take the Cipro that postal management was handing out. "You know," my doctor said, "they're treating you guys like guinea pigs." When the first anthrax letters arrived in Washington, D.C., the Centers for Disease Control assured the U.S. Postal Service that according to the best science on anthrax, not enough spores could escape sealed letters to put postal workers at risk. Joseph B. Connolly, Jr. and Thomas L. Morris, Jr. continued to work at the Brentwood, Maryland faculty. When these men died of inhalation anthrax because of their exposure at work, it was clear that the best science had changed. I'm not going to read this whole thing. Maybe I will, after you've gone, if people want to hear it. But management almost always lies, you know. And people in the post office must be very confused. I'm sure that if anyone can straighten it out, though, Chuck Slotkin can. And maybe he will call.
I guess nobody sends anthrax to FedEx.
Well,
too expensive.
See, I think that finally the FBI has come around to admitting that it was some kind of a domestic invasion of the Postal Service. Either some Aryan nation type, or maybe some CIA people sent it through sent whatever was sent through the mail through the mail.
I think it could have been Milton Berle.
Mm.
That's an assassination theory. On we have many of them in Dallas on JFK. So there's a lot of loose ends to connect before I can prove that.
I thought of Milton Berle this week. I really did. I was at the veterinarian. I was sick cat.
And you saw Milton Berle being treated there?
No. There was a 200-pound dog that was coming out of anesthesia. And his mommy and his daddy were on the floor with him saying, "Come on, Cisco, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up." Kissing him and blowing in his ear. And he lifted his head open and he blinked his eyes. And he did that Milton Berle with his tongue wagging out, falling back asleep. And I thought, that dog has watched too much television.
I guess that's where Uncle Milty picked up that move.
Maybe. Probably from a horse. Do they have any horses left in Texas?
You see them all over the place. Although we're not zoned in Dallas to have them on our property. America is the same from city to city. Mm. Once you get to the suburbs, you know, you can't even keep chickens in the yard anymore, which is, you know, kind of a pain in the ass. You know, I'd like to have free roaming chickens in my backyard, but they don't allow it in Dallas. You need a license, like to have a monkey or something.
Well, you know, I'm a little worried about anthrax, of course, but I'd love to have a goat.
Marvelous animals.
Because
you have to mow your yard.
My lawn is riddled with poison ivy. And they tell me that goats can eat, they go after poison ivy. For them, It's like, you know, some delicacy, like jalapeno peppers or something. And they munch on the poison ivy. And if you drink their milk, you have immunity to poison ivy.
I would have thought that goats were allowed in Staten Island. But I suppose you're not zoned for goat shepherding goats in Staten Island anymore, either. It's it ain't what it used to be.
No, it's not what it used to be.
They allow Keith Richards in.
Yeah, and George Harrison was there too.
Yes.
And the best musical instrument shop in the five boroughs, maybe in the world, is in Staten Island.
Really? What is that?
It's called Mandolin Brothers.
Huh.
They have many of George Harrison's guitars, John Lennon's guitars.
Really?
They have.
Now wait a minute. When you say they have John Lennon's guitars,
I mean, we know he sold them to.
Did he have to hawk a few guitars at one point to raise some for fish and chips or something?
I don't think he had that experience, but you know, record companies are slow payers. No, this is not a pawn shop.
I know, but anyway,
when he traded up for a better one, for another one.
But Lennon's guitars would be a single guitar owned by John Lennon would be in the high six figures.
They have guitars that are close to $1 million in price at this point.
Good Lord.
It's amazing.
And George been there himself? I mean, he was...
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. If you come visit me, I'll take you to Mandolin Brothers and show and
I mean, just to touch a guitar that belonged to George would be a spiritual experience. I mean, it would be chilling.
Just to listen to his music was a spiritual experience.
Well, of course.
You're on the... No. You're on the air.
Hey, Shalom, Ski.
Shalom, Ski.
Yeah. Listen, when I was in Texas, I was there about 2 years, just about everywhere there is to go, which is a very big place, that Texas, but it's really large.
As big as Afghanistan, they say.
And it could be bigger. I took a Texas special from New York in 1957. And a train there, and it took
a Texas special. Is that like a Saturday night special?
An 8-day trip, 4 days outside of Texas, just to get to the border, and 4 days in Texas before I got to where was I going? Lackland was one of the most spots over there.
I heard someone say the other day that they used to say, "We've ridden all day long and all night long, and we're still in Texas."
In 57, 58, all around up in there.
You said it.
And back around in there, they had a road called 99 that went through there. Route 99 or something.
Don't believe
it. Well, it must be over 100 by now.
It could be. I used to go from Waco to Dallas. And when you said fish and chips, I don't remember. I remember Dallas had a lot of chicken in the basket.
Well, we were talking about...
I used to pour him a watch there.
He was talking about London.
Johnny Lennon trading a guitar for a...
Because it's hard really to keep up with a lot of what y'all are saying because, you know, you're hopping and skipping and you got the maestro there. And
You're not listening as carefully as you usually do, Shabazz.
Well, you know, I try to listen.
You got to pay attention, you know, because at least every couple of seconds, we think of something else, you know.
Yeah, I know.
That's what radio is like.
I miss my tumbleweeds in Waco, man.
I thought you liked change.
Huh?
I thought you liked change.
Not when I get irritated with some of those fellas that you got calling up in there on talk of the air, man, you know. Trying to interfere with those females. One thing I dislike is disrespecting females. You know, even in Texas.
This is speaking of disrespect to females. This is WBAI in New York City, and I tell you, you know, if women are respected.
I wasn't raised like that.
If women are respected just because they're women.
I started out in the Air Police. I set up there in Waco, James Connolly Air Force Base. I was like 2 years over there.
Mm.
And I picked up a lot, okay? I learned a lot over there in my career field. And one thing I'll never forget was Old Sarge, okay?
Old Sarge.
Old Sarge. He was a tech sergeant.
Uh-huh.
And he sat back, and he used to sit back in the morning when I go over there and I have a little coffee. And I was about one of the only dudes that appreciated that guitar. That man played the guitar, and he had sometime, once in a while, on certain days, he might have an accompaniment of two folks with him, but he sang, and I remember the first thing he ever sang went something like this. Give me a good old-fashioned love, one that's sent from God above. I don't know if y'all know. Y'all probably kids anyway, man. Let me see. Wait a minute. Bob, you about what? You about 73 or something? I say, right?
No.
But see, you don't in your bag. You don't have none of that real serious Texas stuff, man. And I'm listening.
Well,
we do. I appreciate his stringing, and I appreciate his rapping on the coasters and all that. But I haven't heard no real, not from no Texas setting, man.
You want to hear some Texas guitar?
You got some Texas dudes up in there.
You want to hear some Texas guitar?
I want to hear some Texas. I'm going to hang up. I'm going to listen. I want some Texas.
You got it coming, baby.
My man.
All
right.
The sun has risen, the sun has set, we ain't out of Texas yet.
That's it.
The sun has risen, the sun has set, and we ain't out of Texas yet.
What's that? That's like cowboy poetry.
Yeah. You can drive all day and not get out of there.
Where did I hear that? Did you say that the other night, one of you?
No.
Yeah, it must be going around. Must be going around, because...
What's a good example of some Texas guitar?
Mm.
The first cut off my album, Breakdown, is some Texas slide. Highway 61, but that's when that gentleman who just mentioned that, maybe Bob will play that later.
I might play a bunch of stuff. Now I'm going to play something that isn't even yours.
What?
Don't break my aching heart. You know you loved me true for many years. Love you night and day. Can't you see my tears? The dearest pal you ever had. There'll come a time, now don't forget it. There'll come a time when you'll regret it someday. When you grow lonely, your heart will break like mine. Will want me on it. Your heart will break like mine, and you will want me only.
Veronique, she began to cry. The more she cried, the worse I felt, till I thought my heart would melt. Dead sun, was sinking low. I looked at my baby, she was a walking down the road. I looked at the sun. In my baby, but she bowed her head. Don't that sun look lonesome? Oh, Lord, 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 on the graveyard fence. Don't my baby look lonesome when I hear his band?
From a really wonderful collection by John Cohen of, it ought to be like a museum piece. It's a collection of photographs of the civil rights movement of, what is that? You hear that?
No.
I hear something. Strange. Someone kind of moaning. Hello? Is that you? Are you on the radio? Oh. That's strange. What's happened to the phones suddenly? Funny things happen with telephones around here. Funny things happen with the telephones and have been happening since December 22nd. Sometimes... You know that line in the new Dylan album? Sometimes the boss that begins, sometimes the boss's hangers on. You know the one I mean?
Yeah, I didn't hear it all yet.
No, try to intimidate me. It has the opposite effect. Are you on the air?
No.
Hello? I can't. What could that be? Let's see if this... Hello? Strange. Strange. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, hi. I think I may have... fixed the problem.
Is there music in the back?
There was, but now there is not.
Somebody is playing music now.
What's that, T-Dub?
The high-pitched sound.
Someone's playing
yeah.
music.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the radio. Hi.
Okay.
And I do hear music.
It's kind of difficult because
I do hear music in the back.
I'm hearing music.
They used to call it jamming.
I beg your pardon?
They used to call it jamming.
The music is louder than you. It's very distressful.
Bob, I think someone's taking the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like someone's playing with the telephones. T-Dub, maybe you can come in and...
They're doing that, but hey, listen. Got to persevere.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, that's much better. They cut the nonsense out.
No, are you talking on a cell phone?
I'm not talking on a cell phone. This is a regular phone.
Oh, they have a pay phone in your cell.
No, it's not a pay phone.
Oh, I'm joking. I'm joking.
Huh?
That's a joke. That's a joke.
Oh.
People aren't used to jokes anymore, you know?
You know, well, I'm hearing someone talk now. Now the music is back, and I'm trying to concentrate on you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm trying to concentrate on you.
Okay. Listen,
maybe T-Dub can come back in and figure out what I'm doing wrong.
We have a rug here.
Sounds like music from Virginia, the hills of Virginia or someplace.
Is it your task from playing music over there?
Hello?
Yeah, how's that?
It's dead now. Okay, that's great.
All right.
First of all, it was good news that I heard today in regards to the possibility. Hello?
Yeah.
In regards to the possibility of
I've been advised, let me say I have been warned, cautioned, not to discuss the settlement, although
it looks good to me.
It looks as though it could be good. It could be a trap, but you know, I think maybe we ought to give them a little time to
see how it devolves.
You know,
right. I understand that. My question is, Utrice is no longer there.
That's right.
And did she?
I don't think I can discuss that either, although the Times said that she left. The Wall Street Journal said that she left. The San Francisco Examiner said that she left.
Well, you know, in business, there's a way in which people are allowed to exit gracefully after being told that the door is open.
Well, I'm sure that if she exited it, it was graceful.
I hear you.
I don't mean disgraceful. I didn't say that.
No, you said graceful. I heard you. I'm just hoping.
You might say that her tenure was disgraceful.
Okay. I'm just hoping, you know, with every breath that things are on a positive mode. But I heard something. It was last night on the radio. Real strange. I heard a promo done, and I heard, and I know it was Bernard White's voice. He didn't say this is Bernard. He didn't say...
That's one of those things that I've been cautioned against. That name cannot be mentioned. I'm not even supposed to mention that I can't mention it.
Oh, but I can't mention it?
I don't know. I'm supposed to cut you off if you mention it. How do you like that?
Oh, my goodness. That's terrible.
It is terrible.
Well, BW.
We all agree it's terrible.
Okay, BW.
Bernard Smith.
All right. But anyway, I'm sure that once things have been finalized, and if it's on the good foot, as they say, I'm sure that the listeners will rally and come to the aid and make sure that BAI is financially stable. And add in every way that they can to ensure that we get the news, and I mean complete analytical intelligence instead of the same old over and over again redundant, quote news, unquote.
Mm.
So,
I thought there was a pretty fair report in the WBAI Evening News tonight.
I
put a marker in it, and I was going to run it again later in the program.
Okay,
and I turned around, and the news has vanished from the control room, so I guess they didn't want me to do that.
I'm speaking basically in regards to, like, the morning shows. I mean, hey, like, you see what time it is, and I work sometimes all night through, and at 6 o'clock, you can forget it. I have to switch to NPR or NYC.
Can I say something,
yeah,
like, in defense of the morning show, believe mm-hmm. it or not? I was tuning up and down to see what is on opposite the WBAI news.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether he's a friend of yours, Josh, but I happened to tune to Howard Stern.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's garbage.
And there was Howard Stern interviewing someone who called himself Dr. Duty.
Mm-hmm.
He said he has a website mm-hmm. with pictures. People are encouraged to send him pictures of their morning evacuations.
Mm-hmm.
And he posts them on his website so people will know what a healthy So I turn back to Paul.
I understand what you're saying, but, you know, as I said, I mean...
Look, it's not Democracy Now.
No, Democracy Now. I mean, I miss that so much.
So do I.
My goodness gracious.
So do I, and so does everybody.
And Robert Knight and... Sharon Hopper.
I don't know. I think I've been told not to mention the band.
Oh, those names
in
either.
The fire. Don't mention Grandpa or Valerie or all of the other people.
Owen,
that,
you know.
Don't even mention.
Is Carl 54? Is he all right? I know one time I heard he wasn't too well.
Who?
Well.
Grandpa. He left a message on my phone machine. He called from Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
To tell me to play a song from The Wizard of Oz this morning.
Oh, man.
I'll let you guess what it was.
It's not Brother Can You Spare a Dime.
No, but it begins Ding Dong.
The Witches. Oh, that is cute. Well, then he's okay. He's okay. All right. Well, hey, I'm looking forward to hearing old familiar voices and... Hopefully, I will be able to see old familiar faces. And
you know, when I saw Ding, the Wizard of Oz,
yeah,
when I was a kid, and I don't know what did somebody's tears fell on the red shoes or whatever it was, and the witch shriveled.
Yeah,
I felt really sorry for the witch.
Yeah.
You know.
They threw water on her.
You know, I felt sorry for her, you know. I mean, she didn't make herself a witch. She was made a witch by circumstances.
You know, but I'll tell you one thing.
A circumcision.
Listen to this now. Being so highly intelligent, okay, sometimes my grandmother would say the most educated fools come from school. All right? Okay? And I was truly, and I'm truly hurt on the outcome of the witch having water thrown on her in this way because, I mean, in all honesty, she was a star. She was a star for me, a shining star. And I'm saying, well, hey, we all make mistakes. And that is why they have erasers on pens. The biggest and most difficult thing to do, the bravest, most courageous thing, the bravest thing is to step up to the plate and say, yes, this and that, and I was wrong.
Oh, well, you don't get that.
I know.
You rarely get that.
It takes a very big person to do that.
Richard M. Nixon said, I'm not a crook to the end.
Yeah. How about that? How about that? But the truth, it's like oil and water, all right? Oil always rises to the top. It's like cream and milk. Cream always rises to the top. Truth always will prevail, even with the scenario of things going on today. Truth will prevail.
I certainly hope you're right.
It will. It will, because as long as we have people who think positive and who send out the positive vibes, who connect with people who are, maybe they're on the borderline, they don't know exactly which way they want to go, but if we encourage or just give a word of encouragement or suggestion on where they can look for information and just be patient, and it will come. Good things come in the morning. And, hey, it's all, well, it's morning. What did I say? Listen, it's been a pleasure speaking to you.
May I ask your name?
Well,
masked woman.
My name.
If you don't want to give your name, you don't have to.
Okay.
The great thing about radio talking shows on this station is mm-hmm. that callers can be anonymous. I'm not one of those people who ask people's names
I'm sure
and where they're coming from before they go on the air. I think
there are many who are listening, and they know who I am. They know who I am. Mm. Believe me, they know who I am. Mm. I've been listening now for a number of years, and I've been calling. I have been calling. There's one gentleman that I've called, and I wish I could get back in contact with him. He was... I heard him this morning, and I tried so desperately. Because, you know, sometimes you can talk out of both sides, okay? And I just make it a...
Well, you can call his name if you want without giving yours, if you know it.
Well, he was on 6 o'clock in, this morning, and he was he also has a program on Saturdays. In fact, he talks out of both sides of his mouth. The truth is, very seldom, shall I say, I won't say you never, very seldom do you hear it.
You know, this, I hope...
Very seldom, and...
I hope he doesn't, I mean, I'm sure he will take offense at this if he hears about it, but I always think of Colin Ferguson. He said, "You only thought you saw me shoot those people."
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't shoot those people.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the guy you're talking
mm-hmm.
about. I never said that.
Colin Ferguson,
I
Esquire.
ESQ. Hello?
Yeah.
You are indeed talking about Colin Ferguson, Esquire. ESQ, the attorney and mass murderer, right?
Am I speaking?
No, not you. Bob had mentioned that.
I just thought...
I was always wondering if he was available to help me wrestle some money out of some, to use his legal skills myself someday in court, to wrestle some royalties out of a record company in Texas.
I hear you.
Because he was quite the Perry Mason there for
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, he was. But it's going to be a good year, and, you know, I'll say one thing. I noted that on the 22nd of December, there is asked, of BAI listeners to come down to the station and on the BAI telephone line.
You know, there's going to be a party at the station on the 21st. People should come to that party and celebrate BAI, the fact
it's
that we're still on the air.
A party on the 21st?
That's right. I got a note about it in the mail.
Question, whom will be there?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's...
If all of the good people who have made 1999, if all of those good people who were there that year, or all of those good people who were there in 2000, I will definitely be there.
Well, all right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The phones are ringing off the hook. Lighting up like...
My mama might be calling from Texas, for all we know.
Who am I?
It could be my mama calling.
Listen, it's been a pleasure.
Same.
You have a good morning.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
And you're on the radio.
Yeah, Bob. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Yeah, okay. A disciple of Samori Marksman.
Who is? You are? Me?
No, me.
The whole world has learned from Samori.
Yeah, but I served...
I wouldn't say I was a disciple, though. I had some serious problems with him.
Yeah, me too.
And the great thing about him was that we could thrash him out, and we could still go on broadcasting. Samori never banned anyone, I believe.
Exactly.
Maybe one person who said that, what was it she said? there was one person who punched somebody, and he was banned for a while.
Right.
And then,
I
think that was Clayton.
I could think of three, but he would never.
Then there was somebody, let me see here.
But anyway.
Who called a national politician a scumbag.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Because he said something about New York City being L'Chaim town or something
right.
like that.
That's true. Now, I need you to put on your thinking cap because I'm associated with you guys. Listen, what's that, the mortgages work. Is the mortgages being paid at the theater, at the station?
Oh, that's...
Under the other lady?
Listen, I am
I know.
The last person to ask a question about finances.
Yeah.
I do not have a whole lot of experience in that regard. However, my wife works for a law firm with a few hundred lawyers who could, probably come up with an answer to your question.
Yeah. My ex-girlfriend was telling me the other day it wasn't being done. Wasn't being done, but anyway, what's that? She left on her own, or he?
I'm
putting you on the spot here, but
you know the first book that I took off the shelf and my parents caught me reading and said, "Put that back," was called She,
yeah.
by Rider Haggard, I think Rider Haggard.
Uh-huh.
She, and you know, it probably would be pretty tame today. But when I hear she,
yeah.
you know, I think, oh, someone's gonna be spanked.
Oh boy, what's that? Let me get off the line because I don't want to get you in trouble.
Go ahead, try to get me in trouble.
No, that's enough for me. But I really miss the old gang. I tell you, I really really miss the old gang. And I don't want to call any names, but, you know, with us SGs, us sound gatherers, really miss you out there. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And you're on the radio.
Hi, yeah, this is Cloudy.
Cloudy.
Hopefully both you and Bill Propp can call me at the number I left on your message machine.
Okay, bye. You're on the radio. Hello?
Yes.
Bill Propp is out of town.
Okay, well...
And you're on the radio. You're on the radio. No. Why does this happen? You're on the radio.
Hello.
This is your second call. Isn't it? You're on the radio.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. You know, I'm so pleasantly surprised to hear that you've actually read H. Rider Haggard, and she and
H. Rider Haggard.
Yeah, and he also.
I was about 9 years old. I may have not understood everything in it.
Did you ever try and reread it? I was an adult when I finally got hold of it, but it was written about 1890-something or other, and then next thing I knew, every book I picked up was written in the 1890s. Gosh, for heaven's sakes. Is there any possibility you'll ever read it again?
If I get a copy of it, sure. If you find one, send it to me. I would be happy to read it again.
But I'd be willing to lend it to you so long as I definitely get it back.
Ooh.
Otherwise, I got to keep it, you know. Which the deal? Are you good at returning books if you borrow them?
I'll try. How about that? Is that the best? That's the best I could do. If I had a copy of Josh Allen's father's book, boy, I'm not so sure I would return it. That's a collector's item.
I don't know exactly which book that is. I only tuned in just a couple of moments ago.
Mm-hmm.
Which book are you talking about with Josh Allen?
Got to use that last name on that. On my daddy-o.
On your daddy-o.
Yeah, he's talking about Bruce J. Friedman.
Wait a minute.
Actually, books. But you, Bob... they're not collector's items if you get new copies, I guess. You know,
no, of course not, but at least you read literature, and that's really the bottom line.
The collector's
copies you don't give away.
In the 50s, it was a very big bestseller. It had a picture of a young child seated on
a horse.
A pony. One of those ponies goes around from, like, middle-class house to middle-class house.
I've got my grandmother and my great-aunt Mary on their ponies' pictures from...
Right, well,
talking about A Mother's Kisses.
That's
1964,
right.
1964, actually. Yeah. A Mother's Kisses was the book.
Okay.
It was not mine. It was my daddy's book, as we say in Texas. I'm from New York originally, but I'm a Texan.
You don't mind talking about
it. We say daddy in Texas.
That's okay. I slip into a southern twang, and I'm from the Bronx anyway, so don't ask me where it comes from, but maybe it is from Texas.
You do not have a Bronx accent, my dear.
Whatever. That just means I had teachers who made me speak English proper.
Now repeat after me. The rain in Spain falls mainly in the plain.
The rain in Spain falls mainly in the plain.
That ain't no Bronx accent.
Okay. Well, actually, the D's and the Do's and the Don'ts are really a Brooklyn thing. They're not. And 333rd aren't a Bronx thing. 333rd.
My dad grew up in the Bronx, across the street from Yankee Stadium.
I'm northeast. I'm by Palm Bay Park.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The Bronx is a big land. It's almost as big as Afghanistan, I hear.
Maybe. Maybe. The only thing I know is Palm Bay Park is a lot bigger than Central Park, but nobody knows that, but it is in fact true. But, oh my goodness gracious. I'm just so surprised, though, that you're even familiar with She. I wish you were a little bit older and would have understood it better. But Alan Quartermain was just on a couple of nights ago. They did a flick on it. A movie?
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I actually videotaped it, but with all the commercials intact. Oh. But that was also written by him.
Well, my parents had it on the shelf. That says something.
Mm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because they said that he was actually a precursor to all the Tarzan books and that kind of stuff.
What is this book about?
She?
Yeah.
I explore...
Wait a minute. Don't tell me. It's about a woman, right?
Well, ultimately, yes, among other things. And an eternal flame that gives you eternal youth.
Ooh.
Thing is, you can't... Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to blow it if I tell you...
Okay,
the rest of it.
Don't do
On
that.
The other hand, if you don't get to read it, then I sort of want to tell you. super ultra excellent book. But it's always like She Who Must Be Obeyed. So like in the Christian Parthenon, they'll tell children, instead of praying directly to Jesus Christ, you pray to Mary because that's his mother, and everybody listens to their mother. So you talk to mom if you want to get to the son. You know, that's the bottom line.
Uh-huh.
But there was a whole lot of other eternal truths that he popped out with in such a beautiful, beautiful way. My goodness gracious. I'm telling you, I almost wish I could Xerox it and send it to you, but it's not going to work that way. Oh, for heaven's sakes. But, but I'm going to keep my eyes posted for this other one. Bruce J. Friedman.
Yes.
Mother's Kisses
is
one that I'm looking for.
And you can, if you're a book reader, you can also read a book that was edited by Josh Allen Friedman, who, Terry Southern.
I know the name, and I'm not certain how many things I've read about him. I remember the name, but I'm not getting a clear connection on the follow-up.
The first thing I ever tuned in.
Yeah, and honestly, I keep thinking, you know, he's probably got something to do with the Allman Brothers, or he's got to be a hippie like me.
As a matter of fact, he was the second guitarist in the Allman Brothers.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Okay, well, then I'm really not that forgetful.
How did you got it on the money?
Okay.
First thing of Terry Southern's that I read was The Blood of a Whig. Did you ever read that?
Absolutely.
Talk about that.
The Blood of the Whig.
Blood of a Whig was a story
that was published probably in Esquire in the mid-60s that Terry Southern wrote about, you know, experimenting with different mind-altering substances. And at that time, there was a little bit of a craze on the street for Whig being short for schizo. And the great Chinese poet Qin Li, Terry had gotten a hold of some of his blood right out of Bellevue Psycho Ward and injected some of it and went on quite the trip on that. It was the blood of a Whig. You can. He tried to get some of
Ezra, someone who wigged out.
He tried to get some of Ezra Pound's blood at one time to inject that. So they were just looking for greater highs than LSD and other substances of the time, and that story documented that.
What year about was that taking place?
Oh, in the mid-60s.
So, considering that
back
people...
Back before the Allman Brothers got together.
Yeah. All right, big question. Considering he was looking for these alternative things, what about Ibogaine? I mean, I've heard all this stuff about Ibogaine that they knew about it from the 50s. Did Terry Southern ever do any work with that or try to or anything like that?
You're talking about for people who are balding, that substance to grow?
No, that's Rogaine, silly. Rogaine. Ibogaine is the root of a South African plant, Iboga, Tabanese, Iboga. It's a little bit different. It's like a... I don't know, regeneration.
Terry would have smoked some of that too, I'm sure.
Well,
anything once.
I have some experience with that, not from taking it myself, although once I was given a bit of it to chew on. It is reputed, and I have known people who've taken it, to be an instant cure. Well, not instant, it takes 3 days. Cure for heroin addiction.
And other things is
and
what I've heard.
It causes
and read.
The remission of the. I mean, I've seen people who took it, and for up to 6 months, they didn't have the foggiest idea of going out and scoring. After
better than Cipro.
They had spent. Well, you know, Ibogaine is something that ought not to be taken lightly. It's impossible to get in the United States. There are places where people who need it can arrange to get it, but...
it's an FDA no-no.
Yeah, it's my understanding they keep saying, yes, we can do studies, but no, you can't have any access. That's what I've read and heard so far. No, I was at the NYU conference. I understand that our government just keeps saying, oh, we know it might work. No, you can't get access to it. Yes, you can certainly do a study. You know, and we're kind of a little bit weird in this country about stuff like that.
You're a very energetic person, aren't you?
Well, it's because it's the middle of the night and I'm wide awake.
She's from the Bronx.
You bet.
There's a story in the Terry Southern book. Oh, there are many in this Now Dig This collection that Terry... That we found out of 40 boxes. Terry Southern passed away in 1995. And we found he wrote Dr. Strangelove and Easy Rider and Barbarella and the Cincinnati Kid. And the books that he wrote were Candy, The Magic Christian, Blue Movie, and Allman Brothers Live at the Fillmore.
Holy cow. Well, I couldn't write them all down as fast as you said them, but Easy Rider, I still cry every time I watch it. Barbarella, I've got the comic books. I got to tell you.
So you're familiar with Mr. Southern's work, and most people are without knowing
it.
Most people are familiar with Terry Southern's work without knowing it. You know, he did change the culture, no question about it.
That's good. Thanks and praise.
He was the master of the comic nightmare, and we found quite a few nightmares in his boxes, his son and I, that we put together for Grove Atlantic Press, about 40 pieces that had never been collected.
Holy cow.
He had a famous collection in 1967 called Red Dirt Marijuana and Other Tales.
What was it called?
Red Dirt Marijuana. It's still in print, and certainly the English edition is in print. But this is the follow-up book that came out 6 months ago to Red Dirt Marijuana. We went through 40 boxes of stuff and found some remarkable material, including a scene from what was to be Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut, which Terry wrote the first draft of. He actually began the film 10-15 years ago and wrote this wonderful scene. If Kubrick had only gone with Terry's idea for the film, it would have been really terrific. Of course, they dumbed it down or whatever it ended up becoming.
Yeah, well, that's what happens in the editing room.
So there's lots of golden tidbits that we found that are in this collection now. Dig this. Including his memories of on the set with Dr. Strange. He was an on-the-set screenwriter back in... where he would sit and work with Stanley Kubrick or Tony Richardson. As they were making the film, he'd be writing dialogue and crafting it to the actors just the way a play is done.
I think that's absolutely true.
Screenwriting is not like that anymore.
It should be done.
So that's why some of the films turned out terrifically, and when he wasn't there, they turned out awful. Like the movies of made of his books, The Magic Christian, and Candy. Even Candy is fascinating.
Candy's
failure.
A great movie.
You know,
yeah.
It's got Brando in it and just an all-star cast. But The Magic Christian
it's
was
not up to the book.
Ringo and Peter Sellers was nothing like the book, you know. And Terry was like off the set on that. He wasn't. Had he been there and had some control, it probably would have been marvelous. Because he was some kind of genius from Texas too, from Dallas. Terry Southern.
Yeah.
He'd actually be picking up on the personage of how they were presenting it to make sure that they'd be able to come through as who they're presenting.
Huh?
Well, like an actor.
Okay.
Or an actress.
Are you an actor?
He's picking. No, no. Not at all. Not that I know of, at any rate.
Uh-huh. Not until tonight.
No, it means that when he was on the set, he was picking up on the personage of the people.
The writers or screenwriters are banned from sets of movies. The Hollywood, at least, they're banned from the set. As a matter of fact, screenwriters are even banned sometimes from the opening, opening night of the movie. They're not even invited. And,
oh, gosh, that's because I guess everybody else who presented it is afraid that the screenwriter is going to get up and say, no, it's not supposed to be like that.
That's right.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, because, I mean, the screenwriter isn't going to have anything to say about what happens on the cutting room floor.
Hmm.
And the cutting room floor is only concerned with, you know, oh, we need a running time of this many hours and this many minutes. And I think that is their biggest concern, and that's why so often they wind up coming out with, like, you know, well, this is the director's cut. And this is so-and-so's cut. And I really think that's what that's about, is maybe that is why they're banned. But I think it really is not a good idea. But there's not a lot I can do about it.
Well, do you mind if I put some other people on with you?
Not in the least.
Like
I said, I'm wide awake, so this is okay.
You're on the air, too. And you're on the air, too. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. The delay got me. This is Houston, and we don't have a problem.
There is no delay. You're calling from Houston?
Yes.
All right.
I'm listening by computer.
Ah.
Yes.
Wow. That's right. We're being streamed or strum or strang.
Streaming all over the living room. And
right.
I was just.
Hello, Texas.
Hi. How are you?
Hi there, Houston. Hi, Houston.
This is
Scooter. And
Scooter.
Do
you have a great website, Scooter?
Thank you. And
I like the thing you did with the chips.
With the chips?
People have to go to your website and see the animation on it.
Oh yeah.
What's that? Yeah.
Houston is having a problem.
No, well, I don't know who's breaking. Ooh, that's weird. That's not my line.
I'm Houston, and I'm not doing it.
The Bronx is coming in clear. Houston has a problem.
No, yeah,
my last name is Houston.
I wouldn't be surprised if someone wasn't trying to interfere with our broadcasting this morning. You think that's possible?
Let me try.
Why don't you give the address of your website, since they're trying to prevent that? What's that?
It's on both telephones.
Yeah, well, what's your website?
Scooter? It's Radio for Houston. That's radio, the number 4 and Houston.org. Oh, are we still
Hello?
There?
Yep.
Oh, okay, it went away. Okay, good. But also at Radio for All, radioforall.net is posted this morning from 4 a.m. till 10 a.m. of WVAI, in case anybody wanted to make their own decision as to whether or not the excrement was superior, you know.
Do you want to give a traffic report from downtown Houston for everybody, us in New York here, so we'll know which freeway to avoid?
Come on.
Never mind. Bob says no.
Oh my gosh! I'm gonna have the illustrations from Mr. McDonough on our website in about a minute. So that's
John McDonough of Radio Free Ireland.
That's right, and he's got a collection of animations. That's pretty
Radio Free IRA, actually.
Right, and I'm not sure if we're gonna get intruded upon again. It sounds kind of clean, but hey, it was great to hear your voice, and obviously we're having a problem, so I'll let you go.
Bye bye. Let's see if we can do this. You're on the radio, no? You're on the radio. Hello? Hello, hello. And you're on the radio.
Yeah, is that movie Candy about Candy Jones, Long John Neville's wife?
No. You're on the radio.
That was a good answer.
And you're on the radio.
Good morning. Could I get some clarification about Terry Southern, please?
Yes, we have at least one expert here.
Okay. I have the copy of the video of Dr. Strangelove.
Oh.
The credits in there say, written by Stanley Kubrick and Terry Southern.
That's correct.
That
is correct.
Southern did not write it, but he rather co-wrote it.
Well,
the difference.
Absolutely.
All right, fine. Is one of
that's true.
Connected to that, a part two, if I may. When that film was in production, a man named Eugene Burdick, best known for co-writing The Ugly American, wrote a book called Failsafe. He contacted the studio that was making Dr. Strangelove. He said, I understand that your picture is in effect a comic version of my book Failsafe, and I'm instituting legal proceedings against you.
I'll clarify. I'll take that to step three. Dr. Strangelove was based upon a British bestseller in the early 60s called Red Alert, which predated Failsafe by several years on the bomb. And the man was, who wrote Red Alert, but there was a lawsuit against Failsafe, the author of Red Alert, for ripping off that idea. Failsafe was a terrific book, but it was very close to Red Alert, which Stanley Kubrick. Stanley Kubrick.
Hollywood.
This was bought, actually, Strangelove was filmed in England.
Yes.
And Red Alert was Peter, I forget the name. But, you know, that was the rights were bought by Kubrick, and Terry Southern turned it into a comedy, a black comedy.
Well, are we then able to let Mr. Southern off the hook in terms of possible plagiarism here?
Oh, absolutely. Terry Southern never would have plagiarized. There was no reason for him to plagiarize anyone. He was a font of original ideas, unending original ideas. It would be unheard of and impossible for him to plagiarize. Just the way George Harrison, it would have been impossible for him to plagiarize anyone. The My Sweet Lord, He's So Fine lawsuit was, without question, it was had to be, they called it subconscious plagiarism. But because there's no reason for someone like Terry Southern or George Harrison to have to use someone else's idea. That's an impossibility. They have too many ideas of their own. Terry was a good friend of the Beatles, actually. He's on the cover of Sgt. Pepper.
As long as you mentioned Mr. Harrison, I guess we could say that, may he rest in peace, by the way, that he was the loser here since he had to cough up $500,000.
Well, I'm sure it was...
it's like 20 cents to you and me, by the way.
It was well within his capacity to do that. Yeah. You know,
but at the time, you know, he was very tarnished. And
it must have hurt him emotionally. It must have hurt him emotionally to be accused of plagiarism, because a man like George Harrison would never plagiarize anything.
He was alone among all the Beatles in a problem like that, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. But over the years, of course, we certainly forget.
Do you remember someone named Sigmund Spaeth? He was called the Tune Detective. And he had a show where he would take apart popular songs and he would play like three or four bars. And then he would go to some classical piece that had the identical three or four or ten bars and say, everybody in music steals from
That's
everybody.
A great idea, and that's a wonderful to demonstrate that. You can demonstrate that with hundreds of pop songs, predecessor to it. I heard...
there are only eight notes, you know.
I heard Old Man River. Jerome Kern must have wrote that in the mid-20s for Showboat. And I was somebody gave me some old New Orleans tapes, of course they weren't originally recorded on tapes, of some black jazz band playing a tune that went boom, 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 boom.